WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now it's time for our weekly Ask the Mayor segment. My questions and yours for Mayor Bill de Blasio. Friday is in this 11 o'clock hour, starting a little later than usual because the drive changes the clock, the way we set up the hour. And we're going to set this up today with a moment from last night's debate. After Joe Biden said he would reopen the economy with more protections than Donald Trump, and Biden gave plexiglass barriers in restaurants as an example, the president said this.
If you go and look at what's happened to New York, it's a ghost town. It's a ghost town. And when you talk about plexiglass, these are restaurants that are dying. These are businesses with no money. Putting up plexiglass is unbelievably expensive, and it's not the answer. I mean, you're going to sit there in a cubicle wrapped around with plastic. These are businesses that are dying, Joe. You can't do that to people. You just can't. Take a look at New York and what's happened to my wonderful city for so many years. I loved it. It was vibrant. It's dying. Everyone's leaving New York.
Take a look at what New York has done in terms of turning the curve down in terms of the number of people dying.
Mr. Mayor, welcome back to WNYC. And what's your response to that exchange?
Well, Brian, look, here's the bottom line. This city's been through so much, and yet the people of this city are fighting back. If you go around New York City today, you see a lot of activity. You see kids going to school, largest school system in America open. You see more and more jobs coming back. You see 10,000 restaurants participating in outdoor dining. We got a long way to go. And particularly areas like Midtown have a long way to go. But if you talk about the city as a whole, 8 million plus people, five boroughs, there's been a hell of a lot of progress. And New York also leads the nation in terms of fighting back the disease, leads the nation in terms of opening up schools safely. So every time the president talks about a ghost town, it's an absolute fallacy. It's just absolutely unfair to the people of New York City. And, you know, I turn it on him. I say the only ghost town is going to be Mar-a-Lago after he is forced out of office by the decision of the people on Election Day. But not New York City, a place that is fighting back. And he should be honoring the people in New York City, not denigrating them.
You are rolling out a vaccine distribution plan for the city. But as we discussed in our previous segment, we don't know when such a vaccine will be ready for the general public, or even if there will be competing multiple vaccines. How much of a plan can you announce now, and why do it at this time?
Look, what we do know, and this is what our healthcare leadership says, this is what the scientific community is saying, not the White House, that there is the potential of a vaccine to be available in limited quantity as early as December. And we have to be ready because the first phase that a city believes, a state believes, we all agree would be to reach our healthcare workers, our first responders, the folks who serve us at the front line, but also, of course, the most vulnerable New Yorkers. And so if there is an amount available, we have to be ready to distribute it fairly and in a prioritized fashion. The bigger effort is going to go well into next year, obviously, but people need to understand that the city and the state as well will not accept a vaccine unless we have independently vetted it. And the city and the state both believe in listening to the healthcare leadership, not the whims of President Trump. So I think it was really important for people to know this would be independently confirmed before any New Yorker would be offered this opportunity.
So how will it work?
Well, the notion here is to you know, build upon what we know already. I mean, our health department for generations has led successful vaccination drives. We've done a lot over the years on flu. We did a lot last year fighting back the measles. But, you know, our health commissioner, Dr. Dave Choksi, gave the very powerful example from our history. 1947, millions and millions of New Yorkers were vaccinated against the smallpox in a matter of weeks. And the health department has a really illustrious history of being able to put together this kind of mobilization. Now, it's a different time. There's different realities. But we're going to aggressively use all our tools once we're sure it's safe. Aggressively use all our tools to educate people, answer questions, let them hear real answers from medical professionals in multiple languages, and work with people. And I think, Brian, it's natural that some people will want it right away. Others will sort of watchfully wait. That's okay. But we want to make sure that when it is available, it's distributed fairly with a lot of information. And again, prioritizing those who need it most first.
Essential workers, older people, people with certain diseases you'll identify?
Correct. We know the pre-existing conditions that have made people vulnerable. We know the age ranges where people are most vulnerable. Obviously, you know, first, let's make sure we're addressing the folks who take care of all of us and keep them safe so they can help so many others. But then next priority, those most vulnerable. And one of the things we focused on, address the healthcare disparities. You know, we have identified 27 neighborhoods in New York City that really bore the brunt of this crisis, where structural racism and historic economic inequality came together. And one of the things we're doing, we have a task force of city government leaders, all people of color leading different city agencies. It's our task force on racial inclusion and equity. And the idea of that task force has been to identify where can we do things right now to address the inequalities that came out of the COVID crisis. Well, one of those things is to make sure that the vaccine is available to those who truly need it most. And it is not a rich get richer situation, but a question of equity.
Katie in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with the mayor. Hi, Katie.
Hi. Hi, Mr. Mayor. I'm the owner of two small fitness studios in Brooklyn, and my businesses have been closed for about 7.5 months with no communication about reopening, no timeline, and no financial help since May, which came from the federal government. And, you know, like a lot of other fitness studio owners in the city, you know, these businesses help us support our families, and we're independently owned, not to mention the thousands of employees and tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of our clients who use our services to maintain physical health and mental health. So my question to you is, you know, why are we not being given the opportunity to offer safe services the way gyms are, to pass inspections? And I just don't feel, we don't feel like our services are any more dangerous than a lot of other services that are currently allowed to operate.
All right. Mr. Mayor, why still the distinction between fitness studios and gyms?
Yeah, Katie, I appreciate the question. And let me just say, in your case, if you please give your information to WNYC, I would like our Department of Small Business Services to talk to you about the types of supports that are available for a small business that we can help with, just see if we can help you and any of your colleagues with that. But on the bigger question, so this, of course, again, has been led by the science and by our healthcare leadership, who are very concerned that of the different activities that happen, what, if I could give you the simplest summary of what the healthcare leaders have said, it's one, be concerned about things that are indoor, be concerned about things in smaller spaces or where there's less social distancing potentially, be concerned when people can't wear masks so easily. I think the fitness studios have been in the category of real concern. I know as we've looked at it, it's been one of the areas that we've had to be careful about. Now, I think the bottom line is the more we can fight back the disease in the city, the more we can open up. So we've had a situation in Brooklyn and Queens. We had to be really aggressive there to fight that problem back. We are seeing success. I hope over the next few weeks that situation gets cleared up. And it's time for us to start thinking about what things look like after that, where we could hopefully start to reduce some other restrictions. So we will be talking about fitness studios. Ultimately, though, it's going to be led by our health leaders looking at the data, looking at the science, and making that decision.
This brings us back a little bit to the president's statement that New York is shutting down, New York is a ghost town. Business leaders, including the real estate industry with its owners of New York's office buildings, have been arguing that people are going back to the office much more in other cities, to actual office work. They say here it's still 10%. That stat was in the Wall Street Journal this week. But they also say that you have agreed to model bringing people back to the office by bringing back 25% of city workers by the end of the year. Can you confirm that or refute that?
It's all going to, first of all, be based on what our healthcare situation is, what our positivity level is. We've been talking about when it's right time to start to bring back city workers, but that was before we had the challenges in Brooklyn and Queens. So we're obviously going to evaluate carefully based on how we come out of those problems. But look, I think, Brian, very important definitional point here. I've been all over the city. And I think the truth is, when you're talking about outside Manhattan, the four boroughs that make up the vast majority of our population and the life of the city, people have not left. Overwhelmingly, people have stayed. There's a lot of vibrancy in neighborhoods. You go to commercial strips all over the city in the five boroughs, you see a lot of activity. I think in Manhattan, particularly in more affluent areas of Manhattan, you've seen a certain number of people leave. I think
but
a lot of those folks
that's
will
residential.
Come back.
But wait, that's residential. My
but wait, wait, wait.
Is
I'm going to turn
buildings.
To Midtown.
Okay.
Hold on. Going
Go
to
ahead.
Midtown. And Midtown has been a particular challenge, and exactly because it's that huge concentration of office workers. But I think a lot of the business leaders think of the world from Midtown out, and Midtown's the center of the universe, and the other things are ancillary. And I think, and you know me for a long time, I think it's the other way around. It's the five boroughs, it's where people live, it's communities, and then Midtown's important, but it's not the center of our universe. And so what I think you're going to see is more and more, it will probably take into the beginning of next year, but more and more businesses will come back, employees will come back into Midtown. It'll be slower than other parts of the country because we were the epicenter. But the vibrancy, the power of New York City is unchanged. And we will, the minute we think it's safe, we'll start to bring back government employees to the offices. I think that's important, you know, in some proportion. But I think there's a real dissonance, Brian, because what's happening right now versus what's going to happen a few months from now, I think are going to be very, very different realities.
Zeke in Queens. You're on WNYC with the mayor. Hello, Zeke.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Lehrer. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for taking my question. And thank you for all the work you do here at WNYC.
Thanks, Zeke.
So my name is Zeke, and I'm a bus rider and a student at Queens College. Queens College is a school nowhere near any subways and halfway between your promised Main Street and Jamaica Avenue busways. Mr. Mayor, about 7,000 Queens College students routinely spend half of their bus rides stuck in gridlock on packed body-to-body buses on Main Street or Jamaica Avenue. And most are still doing similar commutes today as essential workers. And I can tell you that on these commutes, we feel forgotten and like nobody cares. Mayor de Blasio, when you made that promise to us students, essential workers, and bus riders, you would finally make us the priority on our own streets with 20 miles of busways and bus lanes. I don't know if you'll understand how that made us feel seen and heard as bus riders in a way that we really don't during our daily commutes. But it's been 5 months now, and we're still waiting, stuck in traffic on packed buses. Mayor de Blasio, you were asked about this last week, but we still haven't heard anything publicly. Have you gotten a briefing? Are you going to roll out these busways before December when paint can no longer be applied?
Thanks for the question, Zeke. And anyone who doesn't feel seen or heard, that's not what I want in New York City. I want everyone to be seen and heard. And I do appreciate oftentimes for years and years, even before the pandemic, bus service didn't get the attention it deserved. Well before the pandemic, we've been expanding select bus service. It's really a big, big part of how people get around. The subways get more attention, but the buses are crucial. And buses have actually been, you know, saving grace during so much of this crisis. And so we made the decision to make the 14th Street busway permanent, and that's been a huge success, and to add. And the latest update, I did get briefed, the latest update is that we said we want to do 20 miles by the end of the year. It looks like it's going to be closer to 17, which is, you know, a good achievement. I'd like to get all 20 done, but it looks like it'll be closer to 17 by the end of the year. We have a particular issue in Flushing with community organizations and leaders and businesses that we're addressing. But this is the way of the future, is to keep expanding the speed and the reach of bus service. So I think this is going to be a strong start that's going to help you and a lot of other people, but then we have to keep going. The future of New York City is mass transit. The future of New York City is not the automobile. It's mass transit. So we've actually really leaned into bus service. We're going to be doing more and more with that. Obviously, ferries is a big piece of the puzzle. There's so many elements that we need to have. Bikes have been a huge success, City Bike. And we got to keep going. That's our future.
Zeke, thank you very much. Mr. Mayor, I want to ask you about the plan that I understand you're rolling out today to dispatch volunteer poll watchers to poll sites across the city, with early voting starting tomorrow and, of course, through Election Day on November 3rd. Our newsroom has asked me to ask you if this is smart, because this is something that Common Cause already announced it was doing, as it has done for years, volunteer poll watchers. And I gather from them that there's a concern that if you, as the progressive Democrat that you are doing this, maybe this is going to backfire and encourage the Republican Party to send out its poll watchers. And we know we're concerned about the kind of intimidation that Trump seems to be encouraging people to do.
Well, that's where this emanates from, Brian. I mean, for decades, there have been plenty of problems with our Board of Elections and inside poll sites with machines and things like that. But this is not what we're talking about this year. For the first time in a long time, we have to be worried about systematic efforts to suppress the vote in communities of color, in immigrant communities, purposeful efforts of intimidation. Look, the president has made very clear he is intending to try to defy the will of the voters. He's saying it out loud. And he told his partisans, you know, stand by. And we've seen acts of intimidation. We've seen efforts to discourage people from voting or to make them think their vote's not valid. We've seen horrible efforts to discourage immigrants from doing anything in their lives. This is a warning sign. And so we have to react differently than business as usual. So we have an election observation corps that'll be out in force on Election Day, hundreds of volunteer lawyers, city officials, folks from the city government who are empowered to act if they see any effort at intimidation. In the past, maybe this was something we could leave to nonprofit efforts, and they're very good efforts, very well-intentioned, but this year we may be dealing with something more systematic. And I actually think cities around the country should emulate this, have an official presence outside. Board of Elections handles inside, but outside. Have city lawyers have official presence in the places we fear may be victim to intimidation, and be able to move very quickly if we see any systematic effort to stop people from voting.
I gather that Common Cause poll watchers go through a specific training. How many people do you have, and what kind of training will they get? I gather from what you just said, you're only doing this on Election Day itself, but how many people and what kind of training?
The focus is Election Day, because that's where we think the concentrated problems could come. We know where the areas of concern are. We've seen this before in history. We certainly know the votes that President Trump and others are trying to stop. We are training. These are city employees, as I said, primarily folks who, from our law department, from our Democracy NYC team, from our census team that have just finished their extraordinary and successful work, will now be turned to this focus. We have to protect the vote. I mean, this is a classic example, Brian. Folks, I think, want to believe, obviously, that our democracy will survive Donald Trump, and we want to believe that nothing like that could happen here. But when you start saying it can't happen here, that's exactly when it does happen. I would rather be too vigilant and too prepared and have hundreds of people out at the polls ready to act than be painfully surprised on Election Day by a voter suppression effort.
So you have a number of how many people it's going to be?
It's going to be hundreds. We'll get the final number, but definitely hundreds. Volunteer city employees, folks who will be trained for sure in how to report and act on anything they see.
Let's get one more caller in here. Peter in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with the mayor. Hi, Peter. We've got 30 seconds for you, so right to it, okay?
Hi, right to it. Thanks for taking my question. Obviously, my industry, the theater industry, has dried up, and I know so many theater companies have had to close because of not being able to pay rent and all these things. And it seems to fall on the producer's shoulders to bring back theater, but I'm wondering if the city can step in and do anything to help.
Peter, real quick, I'd say, first of all, an allied part of your world, you know, film and TV production is coming back strong. I think that's going to be good for everyone in the cultural world. Cultural institutions are starting to open up, but I think theater is going to be, you know, because of being indoors primarily, a challenge we're going to have to be careful about. But what I'm hoping for is we continue to fight back the disease successfully. That's been our history in the city. That's the door opener. And then we work hard at a real federal stimulus, which looks like February now is the honest truth, but one that would reach cultural workers and reach sectors that have been hard hit with direct subsidies so people can get back on their feet. I think that is doable as a result of the election. I think we're going to see. I hope we're going to see. But we have to help bring back the theater community. This is essential to New York City's identity, humanity, economy, you name it.
Quick follow-up on that. We had a guest who you probably know of, Dr. Ashish Jha, the Dean of Public Health at Brown, this week, who said that if New York and other places can ramp up these rapid tests to a very large degree pretty quickly over the next few months, things like the theater district can reopen with these sort of, did you get your rapid negative test passport that day? Apparently, they're already doing that at Saturday Night Live for the limited audience that they're allowing. And I'm just curious if the city has any plans, considering how much of a concentration of theater and music and other venues we have and how shuttered they are, for you to go really big on this. We have 30 seconds.
It real simple. We would love it if we can get two things done. One, confirm the quality of the test, which has been an open question up to now, and two, and the accuracy. And two, get it in sufficient quantity, which has also been a challenge. Rapid testing is absolutely on the agenda, but not yet confirmed, both in terms of quality and the availability of serious numbers. But if it does become available the right way, it could be a big piece of reopening theaters and other parts of our economy.
Mr. Mayor, thanks as always. Talk to you next week.
Thank you, Brian. Take care.